are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Hello, OneOfUs.net listeners. This is London Viavong, one of the staff writers for the site. And if you somehow stumbled onto this, first of all, thank you. And second of all, welcome to this weird show that I got specially greenlit. So, you're probably thinking, okay, what is it? Well, it's quite simple. Last year, in 2017, the summer of 2017 to be more specific, I attended two different film festivals. One was the Indie Gathering and United Latino Film Festival, and the other one was the Horror Hotel Film Festival. Both took place in the same area, Hudson, Ohio, both at the Clarion Inn. And like I said, they both were on the same time, both about a month for each other. The Horror Hotel was first, that came out in June, and the Indie Gathering and United Latino Film Festival, I'm going to call it Indie Gathering from the future because, Jesus, that's too long of a title. So, but nonetheless, the Indie Gathering took place in August, and like I said, they both took place in 2017. I know it was really long. I had issues with editing and all types of stuff, so let's just get that out of the way. You get to hear it now. But anyways, while I was there, I did a lot of fun and awesome activities, and I also spoke to a lot of really just creative and brilliant people, and they all had some really wonderful stories. And, you know, I felt so bad. Like, I took all this footage. I met all these people, and, you know, I was like, I really want to tell their stories and put it out there. So that's what this is. It's me talking to the people at the Horror Hotel and at the Indie Gathering and talk about them, you know, all the awesome creative things they did. You know, these are all filmmakers and creatives, and, you know, they're all talking about it's gonna be pretty cool. Like, all these people are very interesting, so I'm really looking forward to it, and I really want to just go push forward. But first things first, I want to thank two people who helped make this possible, and they are Billy Bolt. His real name is John Bolt, but he goes by Billy. He helped me with the editing, and really thank from that, because we all know how much editing is a headache. And I also want to thank John Thomas, who just took some just beautiful photos. I mean, just brilliant, great photos. I don't know where I'm going to present it. Maybe it might be here. Maybe it might be on like some Facebook page or something. But it was really great. And he also helped me with the originally this was video, but I changed the audio because it just looks better. It just sounds better. So he helped me get to all the footage and everything. So I have to thank him a lot. He's a great person to work with. So I just wanted to, you know, give all my thanks to him. So, but you know, okay, blah, blah, blah. All this is out the way. So like I said, let's get started with the show. Now, it's going to be broken down into two sections. The first one's going to be the Horror Hotel, and because that took place chronologically first. And I'm going to interview all of them. Then we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to move on to the Indie Gathering for the latter half. So, in between each, before every interview, I'll introduce them and say what they're doing, who they are, blah, blah, blah. But, so that's going to be the format and the setup. Now, so I'm going to introduce my first interview. And it's the hostess of the Horror Hotel, and she's also the producer. She helped founded the Horror Hotel, and she also is the hostess for the Horror Hotel TV show. There's a TV show and the film festival, and she's going to talk about the event and, you know, all the cool and awesome stuff you get to do there. So without further ado, I now present the wonderfully lovely and brilliant hostess, Lamia.
I'm Lamia with the Horror Hotel TV show and the Horror Hotel International Film Festival and Convention, which we're here at now.
I want to do a quick personal question, and I hope this isn't offensive. I want to talk regards to your age. You know, being a vampire, probably like a couple hundred years old. So what made you decide to make the film festival? You know, something so modern.
I love cinema. I was around in its infancy. I saw it start up, and I've always been a fan of it. And, you know, all arts in general, really, but the great thing about film is, you know, everybody's kind of a freak. And for vampires were always considered freaks. It was a place where we could fit in, was in films. And I've loved to see the growth of cinema, and that's why I do the show. And the festival actually started before the show, and we've been running the show for 3 years, but the festival for 6 years, just bringing these independent filmmakers together because, you know, these independent filmmakers, they remind me of the early filmmakers who didn't know how to do anything. They were all learning, and that's what these indie folks are about. They're learning their craft. They're, you know, promoting their projects. They just want to get themselves out there, and we give them the platform to get themselves out there.
Yeah, and offer that, like, unbounded creativity, right? Like, do you feel that here? Like, do you see, like, a lot of creative works and, like, different, like, ideas, something that you don't really get to see in the mainstream?
Absolutely. You know, one thing I see a lot of is remakes and reboots and retellings, and I find that, you know, an independent filmmaker is not, they don't have the limits. They don't have the investors who they have to please. They don't have to, you know, fit a certain niche market. They get to tell the stories that they want to tell. And so they can really put all of their creativity into their stories, into the entire project. And, you know, here it's all about connecting them together, you know, bringing those different visions together.
Okay, well, it seems like, yeah, we're going to have a lot of different people here, but what other activities are going to be here at the festival?
So we have over 100 film screening. We have lectures and panel discussions on all aspects of filmmaking, from acting to directing to stunts, editing, everything like that. We have a Saturday classic car show and outdoor screenings, as long as the weather holds up. So we're hoping no rain. And that was a big hit last year. We introduced that last year. We also have Scream Queen and Scream King competitions, which are a lot of fun. Ladies get to win a sash, and, you know, it's a lot of fun. We have FX makeup competition, special guests, vendors, selling merchandise, and a lot of networking. You know, we're very filmmaker-friendly, so a lot of the people here are working in the industry, and we also get a lot of fans, so we're, you know, bridging that gap to bring them together.
Okay, that sounds awesome. And I hope you guys really tune in and enjoy the whole thing. If you love horror, if you love blood, if you love guts, or if you like filmmaking, then I think this is going to be a fun program for anyone to go see. So just before I go, where can people find you, and you got any other plugs you want to make?
Horrorhotel.net, Facebook.com/horrorhotelfilmfest, Instagram @horrorhotelshow. You can find all the information you need on any of those.
And that was Lamia, the hostess of the event and producer of the Horror Hotel Film Festival. She does a lot of other things too, but I'll be here forever if I label them all. But let's just say this, she is awesome. So, moving on to our next interview. And they are Timothy Troy and Dan McGuire. They're both filmmakers. Timothy Troy is a director and Dan McGuire is the editor. And he won Best Microfilm at the Horror Hotel. And their film is called Ding Dong. And I want to do a quick mini review right after the interview because I have something interesting to say. But anyway, so they're gonna both talk about the filmmaking process and what they did, and, you know, talk about their film a little bit. So, without further ado, I now present Timothy Troy and Dan McGuire, winners of Best Microfilm at Horror Hotel for their film Ding Dong.
Tim Troy. I'm the writer and director of Ding Dong. It's a four-minute short film that's playing at the Horror Hotel Festival.
And I'm the editor.
The unsung hero, the editor.
Exactly.
Okay, so what made you decide to make this a micro versus like a longer film or a feature?
You know what? It was just the length that the movie needed to be. And I think that's kind of the best reason to make a movie any length. It's just don't make it longer than it needs to be. Don't make it shorter than it needs to be. Just let the story be what the story is.
I think that's a great advice to anyone out there. So can you talk about, like, where did you get the idea for this film? Actually, could you talk a little bit about what it's about?
Sure. The film is about a girl that's trying to get to sleep at night, and the doorbell keeps ringing, and she's got to figure out what or who is ringing the bell. And it gets a little terrifying for her.
Short and simple, but frightening. That's usually the best kind.
the idea is pretty simple. It came to me just, I was trying to figure out something I could do short, cheap, easy. I had a house that I had perfect run of, and so the idea was what normal sound, what everyday sound can I take and kind of twist and make scary? So I came up with a doorbell, and from there the whole thing just kind of fell into place.
That's interesting, playing around with sound. So what was the editing process for you? Like, did you have a lot to work with, or was it just, was it not so much because it was a smaller film?
Well, it was a pretty efficient shoot, so I'd say I really had just enough to work with. It was actually one of the easier films to edit because it was shot very efficiently and methodically. So in the editing room, most of it just kind of fell into place, and it was really just about getting it to be as good as it could be versus trying to pull a good film out of substandard footage.
Okay, so what's your creative process for, like direction?
I look at a microfilm or the same way I would look at anything else. You just take it one shot at a time and one scene at a time and figure out how it all fits into the bigger piece, you know? Every little decision you make as a director has to inform the larger story at all times. So, and that's the best way I can put it.
Okay, awesome. So, you have any final plugs you'd like to make?
If you want to see the film, it is available online. You can look up Crazy Little Monster Productions on YouTube, or you can find it on Facebook at Ding Dong Movie, or you can just search my name and eventually it'll come up somewhere, Timothy Troy.
So, they were Timothy Troy and Dan McGuire, make creators of Ding Dong. Now, I did see Ding Dong, and you can also see it on YouTube. It's only 2 minutes long, and gosh, does it, like, it packs a punch in those 2 minutes. I mean, it's 2 minutes long, so I can't talk much about it because I don't want to spoil anything, but great sound design. Like I said, I wish I could say more, but let's just say this, it's great. And, you know, check it out. I'm going to have the link in the description. So, you know, just check it out. It deserved to win because, well, I didn't see the other ones, but I did see that one. I thought it was just, it's 2 minutes long, so it won't take much of your time. But man, it's just, I really loved it. I thought it was great. Also, too, Timothy Troy is making, he's crowdfunding for a new film that he's working on. It's called ABI Glass. I think that's the working title on it. So, you can, if you saw Ding Dong, you'll want to support his other works because he's very talented. So, I'll provide a link to that as well. So, go check that out. He already has a teaser trailer up for it. So, you know, it can. So, like I said, go see Ding Dong and, you know, get pumped up and, hey, support his other works, you know, because I think, hey, he's an independent filmmaker, so you always got to give props to the independent. So, hey, Tim, if you're listening, good luck with that, and I look forward to seeing it. Okay, so my next guest is Nathan Ludwig. He is a filmmaker, and he's going to be talking about two of his projects that he had at the event. One is a screenplay called The Necromancer's Guide to Success, which won Best Feature Screenplay at the festival, Horror Hotel Festival, and also a short called Checked Out. And he also runs his festival of his own called the Genre Blast Festival. That's in Winchester, Virginia. And they present it at the Alamo Drafthouse, and they are August 30th to September 2nd. And yes, they'll be presenting it again this year in the 2018. So, like I said, August 30th to September 2nd, you can check them out. So, but like I said, I'll talk about all this again. And so I now present Nathan Ludwig talking about his two film projects at the Horror Hotel event. Well, you're here to advertise two awesome things that you've done, Checked Out and
The Necromancer's Guide to Success, which is a feature screenplay. That won first place here at Horror Hotel.
I want him to say it. Okay, so talk a little bit. Okay, before we, since the Necromancer's screenplay won an award, I want you to talk about Checked Out first.
Okay. I produced and co-edited a short, micro short film that's playing here on Sunday called Checked Out, and it's kind of just a short setup for like a slasher film, but it's a complete scene in the whole short film. It's about a convenience store clerk who runs this racket at a convenience store where he's killing people and piling up the bodies. And this girl makes a late night beer run, and she goes to the wrong store. So it's fun, and it's I didn't direct it, I didn't write it. That's my co-associate Charles Hill. He came up with all that and shot it in one night when he got access to a convenience store in Oregon, which is where he lives. So it was a great little shoot, and we had a lot of fun. And now we're just getting out to a couple festivals, and we're lucky to be here.
I feel I'm hearing some Sweeney Todd in there. Would you like to talk about your influences?
A little bit of Sweeney Todd now that I think about it. Yeah, but mostly our influences are just, you know, kind of just grimy, gritty, low-budget kind of slasher movies. And that's pretty much it, really. We just said, what can we do with this convenience store in one night that we have access to? And that's what we came up with. And, you know, there's three people in the store, and there's just as many people on the crew, and it, you know, took about 6-7 hours to do, and we just knocked it out. It was a lot of fun.
I think you did a great job with that, especially you said one night. Wow, that's, that's awesome.
Necromancer's Guide to Success. That's all you need to know. And so basically it's a kind of like a big-budget action horror fantasy film. It's about this college slacker. He comes into possession of a necromancer spellbook that's been handed down from ages and ages, and he really doesn't even want it. But him and his friends are kind of forced into using this book to learn how to become this team of, like, magic users, like the magic of death and controlling the dead and zombies and stuff, in order to stop these two warlocks who are back from the dead that want the book and want to start an interdimensional war that's been dormant for like 600 years. So now it's this thing that's spilling over into our world, and it just gets crazier and crazier as the story goes on. And it's got lots of funny quips and one-liners, but it's also got a lot of really, really crazy gory horror stuff too. It's pretty much anything I would want to see in a movie, all in one screenplay. So
I think they'll make a great book, too, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, would you think you ever do that? Like, once it gets made into a film, would you like to, like, convert it to that, or like, make, like, a little Bible or something?
I kind of want to convert it into everything. I want to convert it into a graphic novel, into a novel. So I'm actually working on kind of doing, like, the bones of a novel right now. So it did really well in some screenplay competitions, and I got some really great feedback. But it's so expensive, you know, and I have no connections, like, per se, into, like, major motion pictures right now. So it's not really anything I'm expecting to get made ever. So I kind of want to explore opportunities with, like, books and with graphic novels, too, and see where it goes. You know, maybe that'll pick up somewhere. So, yeah, I'm definitely checking that out.
Oh, yeah, big, good. Get that fan base, get people all into it, and they'll bug the studios. Hey, fund this. We want to see this.
You know, I know a lot of people that turn their screenplays into graphic novels, and then they get popular, and then that's how they get made into a movie. So it's almost kind of like reverse psychology or reverse engineering a movie through a graphic novel or a novel. So, yeah, you can do that.
Awesome. And one final thing I want to ask. So let's talk about the creative process, because that sounds awesome. That took a lot of effort, a lot of creativity. How did you get to that point? Like, how do you get there?
Well, how did I get to that specific screenplay, are you saying, or just writing in general?
Well, in general.
In general? Well, I don't know. I've been writing for about 12 years, trying to write screenplays for about 12 years. And just the last 2 or 3 years, I've started to get a lot of success with it. So it's just patience. If you're in it for the money, you're doing it for the wrong reasons. That's like an after effect. So,
yeah,
you know.
Seriously.
You just have to love to write. And I've always loved to write stories since I was a kid. So I was always writing short fiction and little comic books and stuff like that. So I feel like I have to write. If you don't feel like you have to write, then you're not a writer. That's just all there is to it. So, you know, that's what I do. That's my therapy. That's my workout. That's my everything. So is writing. So that's where I'm at.
Spoke like a true writer. So any other plugs you'd like to make?
No, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter. I'm there hanging out sometimes. At Lugenhausen on Twitter. That's LLOGENHAUSEN. And I'm on Facebook as Nathan Ludwig. And I also run a genre film festival called Genre Blast Film Festival in Winchester, Virginia. We're going to be at the Alamo Drafthouse Winchester this September. So it's a lot of fun. Crazy genre films from around the world. We do a screenplay competition. We do all kinds of awesome stuff. It's going to be bigger than last year, and you should check it out. We're on Twitter and Facebook, too, Genre Blast Film Festival. One word.
And that was Nathan Ludwig talking about the film festival that he hosts and the two projects that he had there, which was the Checked Out and Necromancer's Guide to Success. God, I still have trouble saying that now. Which one best feature? So like I said, check out if you're in the area, if you're really interested, you can go check out his film festival, Genre Blast. It's at the Winchester. It's in Winchester, Virginia, at the Alamo Draft House. So, and it's gonna, like I said, it's gonna be from August 30th to September 2nd of 2018. So, yep. And there's that. So, moving on, we're going to go on to a music composer. His name is Landon Knoblock. Not London, Landon. I know it sounds very similar, probably even the way I'm pronouncing it. And he is also the Scream King winner of the festival. If you remember from earlier in the podcast, Christina Met talked about what the Scream King competition is. Or Scream King and Scream... Scream Queen and Scream King competition were. And it's... people get up from a panel, scream as loud as they can, and whoever wins get a nice trophy. So he won that as well. So everything about sound, he's awesome at. So anyway, so he's going to talk about... this interview is going to be his talking about his career as a composer, you know, and his creative process and all that fun stuff. So as we move on, I now present Landon Knoblock.
OneOfUs.net, London's back, and I found someone I really wanted to see, a composer. Yes, something that many people forget about in movies and how important they are. So I'm going to ask a couple of questions, but I also have a major important thing to mention. He is the Scream King. Yes, look at that awesome trophy right there. He's a scream. Yeah, it's good. You want to give a little bit of a sample here?
I don't know, man. I think we're late to the party on that one. I already gave my award-winning performance with the screams.
Okay. Well, then just check out Horror Hotel and .net, and you'll be able to see that.
I think there's going to be like a video of it up there, so incentive to check it out. All right.
Okay, guys. I'm sorry. I missed it. But okay, so let's get into the meat of the story.
Yeah.
Composition. You're a composer, so
yeah.
Something that's just really I want to talk about is like the creative process. So, do you get the song when you like look at the scene or look at the film where they describe it to, or do you like go to bed and like, oh, it's a great music, it's a great song, I want to write that down.
That's a great question, man, because people think that all writing is like the lightning bolt, right, that hits you, you know, when you least expect it, and that could happen, but when you compose for a living and when you're a writer, when you write music, you got to be able to write like anytime, no matter what. If someone's got something that needs to be written, and you got to be able to turn it on like a light switch. So that's something for that. But I think really nothing really happens till you see it. You know, you can read a script, you can have some ideas, but nothing's really going to happen till you see what the story is, what the feeling is, the emotion from the screen. You know, whether it's a character that you have to connect with, or whether it's a feeling you have to connect with. That's when you're going to start getting ideas, when you see. You know, I don't really write from the words. You know, I kind of write from the picture.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. I mean, that's, like I said, it's different, you know, art transitioning, you know, the adaptive process. So, you know, you got to be able to see it and see how it all works together. Yeah, I totally get it. So, something else I really want to talk about was, like, the mainstream. You know, something that I've heard some composers complain about, especially more famous ones, they hate this new kind of, like, theme that's going on, this new trend about, you know, really it's mostly about sampling and not about, like, making up, like, more music. Like, I can't think of who complained about it, but, you know, something like, a big complaint is like the Marvel figure. You know, there's not, you can't really hear it. So how do you weigh in on this, like, trend?
Well, I mean, man, those are tempo movies. You know, they're big movies, and they work. And, you know, those movies are like, when you watch a scene from a Marvel, like Avengers or whatever, that scene, there's everything in that scene. It's blowing up in your face. And it works, and it's fantastic. I mean, it's unbelievable. But it's not melodic writing. You don't take away from that, like, a great melody. You know, it's not like a Bernard Herrmann something from, like, a Hitchcock film. It's not like a Jerry Goldsmith. It's not like an Elmer Bernstein. So it's a different style of writing, but the, you know, like these films, there's a formula, right? People talk about the Marvel formula, right? Like Doctor Strange, or like, you know, even with on the Netflix films, like from Luke Cage or what's the kung fu one that came out? Oh, Iron Fist. There's a formula, and the music is formulaic too, but we're not getting that like iconic melody that we take away, you know, the John Williams melody, you know, like the Alan Silvestri melody, like Back to the Future, you know, so
stuff that you actually were willing to buy outside of the movie.
So, well, that's a great point. Something that might exist standing alone on its own away from the film. I mean, that's kind of an incredible thing if you think about it. You know, to be able to put on a movie, a song, a sound, something that's coming from a score and it stands on its own. You know, Howard Shore is a great example of a guy like that. James Horner, you know, like Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan, you know, there are themes in that like are iconic, and they're integral to the film, you know, but yeah, you don't get it with the Marvel movies, but it doesn't mean it doesn't work. It's still amazing and it still works, but it's just a different thing.
No, I got you. I mean, you know, it's just like I said, I thought it was an interesting thing to talk about,
yeah.
I want to hear it from a composer, like what their standpoint is. So honestly, I think you gave like an honest answer,
yeah.
You know, like it's true, it's not like the artsy fartsy one, but you also you gave like really a deep one into something is commenting that it's a different feeling.
It's different, so and I don't mind it. I like it. I mean, it's amazing. I think you know, there are that's hard to score, man, and it's hard to get that stuff right, you know. But then again, look at like the Star Trek the Star Trek reboot series, like Michael Giacchino scored that, and that he did a great job of making something like an iconic sound for the new Star Trek. I think for the new Star Trek reboot.
Oh, yes.
You know,
I love Star Trek. I love the score.
So, you know, and he had a lot of material to work with from before, but he kind of made something new. So it's still being done, you know, that thing.
Well, speaking of like great compositions, what are some that you've done that you were like, oh my god, I'm so proud of this? Come on, you don't have to be humble.
No, that's a great question. So actually, just came out on Shorts TV, which I guess there's a cable channel somewhere high up in the cable numbers called Shorts TV, a show short films. A short film I did called Redux, which is kind of like kind of has a retro sci-fi feel to it, and it's a short film about love and time travel, and I did a very cool kind of like hybrid analog synthesizer score to that. So that thing sounds pretty dope. I just finished a web series that's going to probably be coming out in the next 3 or 4 months called The Outer Boroughs, which I did kind of like an orchestral kind of like Ghostbusters Elmer Bernstein score meets like Supernatural, or you know, like a Person of Interest kind of guitar score, so kind of like a mashup of that. So I just did that, which is very cool as well. So those would be worth checking out.
Awesome.
That's cool, you know. Yeah, man. So,
all right, good. Well, I think we got enough. So,
beautiful.
So, do you want any more plugs you want to mention besides the awesome movies you already talked about?
My name's Landon Knobloch. I don't know if we covered my name.
We
had this thing because you're London, and I'm Landon, and I know people always say like, oh, London, and then
people the opposite with me.
We had this thing going on.
Yeah, I should have did that joke in the beginning. It's like, hey.
We connected right off of the bat, like with that. So, but my name is Landon Knobloch. I'm in New York City, and so
all right, cool. Well.
And that was Landon Knobloch, film composer and screen king of the Horror Hotel Film Festival 2017. And so now we're moving on to a woman named Rika Brikisak. She is a veteran actress who is dipping her hands into other aspects of filmmaking, where she helped produce another film that was being presented at the festival called The Lurking Man. It is an adaptation of the play by Keith Rommel of the same name. And so here she's going to talk about the film, her involvement, and she's also going to discuss her career as a film actress. So I now present Marissa Brickisack.
This is London here, and I am with the amazing Marissa.
Maritza Brickisack.
Hey, she can pronounce, not me. Okay. So, one of the biggest disappointments I had is I was not able to see her film because I looked at it, and it was a big buzz. It's called The Lurking Man, and if anyone who's here, they all want to see it, and this is a huge repertoire, a huge background, and I wasn't, and so I'm so happy that she got the time to talk to us. So I would first of all say thank you for doing this interview.
Thank you
so much. Okay. So like I said, I just want to talk. Why don't you talk a little bit about yourself?
I will. Okay. So I'll take it from here.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Wait, thank you for having me. The film is The Lurking Man, where I am the executive producer, the co-writer, the editor, and lead actress in the film. And it's about an alcoholic woman, played by me, in the role of Kaylee, that is an abusive mother, and she's given a chance at redemption if she accepts death's offer. And we were invited to the screen here. This is our Ohio premiere, so it was wonderful to have it here at the Horror Hotel, and we received a nomination for my lead actor, Daniel Lynch. Yeah, and we received a win for the honorary mention, so we're happy. We're not going home empty-handed.
God, there's so many parts. How did you balance all of that to make this movie?
It wasn't easy because of all the hats that you wear in this production, my heart and my passion is in being an actor. So to focus on that, so I wouldn't be detracted from the energy and the demands the role required, I just had to make the decision of just hiring a company to help me film the film. And then that way, that would take the stress of my performance. And it worked out very, very well. We ended up with a beautiful film. And the film took about 4 or 5 months to write it. My co-writer, Keith, and I, Rommel, and myself, we wrote an award-winning script. And let me see, what can I tell you about him? Oh, and it's an adaptation of his novel of the same name.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I saw
that.
Exactly. So, and this is very interesting because two of Keith Rommel's adaptations were at this festival. The other one was The Cursed Man, and also received an honorary mention. And I'm taking that with me home as well.
We got all the awards and all the buzz. Like I said, it's an amazing film. People have a comment about the psychological aspects of, it's a lot of very thoughtful. You're talking about very sensitive issues, very personal ones. So, what do you want the audience to get out of watching it? What do you want the message or meaning to be?
My intention when I made the film was, as an actor, I wanted something for me, a vehicle to showcase my acting ability. And one of the things that I noticed from the audience when finished watching the film is that they come to me and it made them feel. They connected in such a way because it deals with pain and loss. It's not a happy ending movie. I don't want to spoil it too much for those who haven't seen it and get a chance of watching it. But it deals with the choices you make in life. If you keep choosing to feed the negative, it will eventually consume you. And that's the message in the film. And that's our log line. Stop feeding the monster within.
That's a great message. I love movies that, they might be dark, but they actually have a positive message and a positive theme, and I wish I could see it. One day I will see it.
We'll make arrangements.
Okay, I will see it. I'll do a review, too. And I'll
send you the link.
Okay. Okay, awesome. Yes, thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so any final plugs you want
to
make?
If you need to reach me, I'm very easy to find. Find me on Facebook, and then my name, Maritza Brickisack. Not easy to spell, but easier to find me through the film, The Lurking Man movie, in Facebook. And I'm linked. So if you need to talk to me, any questions, I'm here.
And that was Maritza Brickisack talking about The Lurking Man and her career as a film actress. So since the interview, I have seen The Lurking Man. And here's my little quick review of it. Unfortunately, I'm just not that big a fan. It's very theatrical. And when I mean theatrical, I mean it feels like it should have been on a stage as a play. It is an adaptation of a play, and it really comes off as one. There's so little of sets, and all of them, they can just they could all be put on a stage. And I did like Maritza. I thought her acting was great. She has this look of pity, these eyes that really just drive such, like, just sorrow and mercifulness. It was like a sad puppy, you know, just these big puppy dog eyes. And the person who played the Lurking Man, I thought he did well too. The Lurking Man is like a I don't want to spoil too much, but like an angelic-like feature, an angelic-like creature. And he has a lot of makeup on, and I thought he was very played very theatrically as well. And like I said, I just felt like this just feels better as a play. So now, as we're moving along, we're actually going to move on to my final interview with an horror hotel section of the podcast. And they are Greg Hempel and Donald McLeary, who had come all the way from Scotland to present their film West Scara Light. And the film won a couple of awards there. It won the Best Overall Film, Best Director, and tied Best Feature Film with Devil's Whisper. So I now present to very jolly and quite large guys. I say this because I had to sit in between them to get this interview. So, Donald McLeary and Greg Hempel.
Hello, oneofus.net. London's back, and I'm here with two directors who came across the pond, as they say, from Scotland, Greg and Donnie.
Hello.
Yes.
How
yes.
You doing?
And they directed a film that has won a bunch of awards. That's why we're hearing all the ruckus and everything. And I'm going to show off the awards real quick, but I'm going to show off these two wonderful gentlemen next to me. And so I just want to just ask a couple quick questions, because like, I looked into your guys' background. You have a big resume, both of you.
Yeah.
I really do, especially in like, you know, comedy writing.
Yeah,
I definitely see that. So I just want to just real quick, like, why did you guys decide to delve into horror?
Because we've always loved it. For the last, I think 10 years, every Sunday night, we've sat in the theater in Greg's house and watched two horror movies, an old classic and a new movie. And we just found that we had really, really similar horror ideas. And so we wanted to get together and see if we could do something. And that was why we did it.
Okay, I've been praising this film so far, but I got to tell you, it's called West Scara Light. Mm-hmm. And I got to say, what's it about? Let our audience know.
Okay. West Scara Light is about a landlady called Frances McGilvery who owns a lighthouse. It was her family homestead, and she's struggling financially to hold it all together, so she decides to put it on the market, and prospective buyers come to stay for the weekend to vet the lighthouse and decide whether they want to buy it, and one by one they start to disappear.
Yes. And what he didn't mention, it's extremely funny, and it balances the tone of horror and comedy so well. So I just want to say, how did you guys do that? Because it's so hard for many filmmakers to do.
Well, we've cited this a lot of times, but our template film for it was American Werewolf in London, which is a very funny film, but all the humour comes from character. There's no goofy jokes in it. It's all about the story is serious, but the characters are funny. And so what we tried to do was give a group of characters who were funny characters, but they were all taking the story seriously, and we took the story seriously and spent a lot of time working out there's three layers to the story. There's a legend, there's what actually happened, and there's the story that's happening in the present day. And we worked them out to a mathematical decimal point, you know what I mean? We really we were forensic about that. So hopefully then all the funny is funny for the right reason, you know?
Hey,
that makes sense.
Oh, no, I'm completely respectful of that balance. We were sort of like pathological about it, you know. But the thing that we found, you know, as Donnie touched on, we've been writing together for 10 years. We wrote Wesker with absolute joy in our hearts, howling and laughing every day, trying to make it the best possible script that we could. But also, I think we were really, really hard on ourselves with our scrutiny and whatnot. To make sure there was no holes in it and that the boat sailed, as it were. No leaks.
No leaks. Of course, you can tell that to the characters in the movie. Hey, guys, watch out for the water. Okay, I just want to do one last final quick question.
Sure.
Okay, about horror. So, you know, you guys are from Scotland. Mm-hmm. So, do you find there's anything different between, like, horror in the United States and horror in, like, Scotland? Is there any, like, cultural differences? Like, what's scarier there or what's scarier here?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I think, obviously, Scotland has a kind of longer history. So I guess there's more of a... I think there's a sense in Scotland that there's maybe magic could still happen because we have castles that are, you know, 1,000 years old, and the idea of a ghost appearing in that place is not so unlikely as it maybe would be from, you know a 60s apartment block. Maybe there's something about the antiquity of Scotland that gives you a kind of, you know, but it's more of a sort of Hammer kind of misty...
The other cool connection as well is Halloween, of course, because Halloween was invented in Scotland, and then they don't really do it the way you guys do. So the Americans, you guys took the ball, ran with it, scored a touchdown, and spiked it in the end zone. So yeah. We've got that in common. You see, there's a strong link, strong Halloween.
Yeah, we love American horror. We should say as well, two of the main influences on this film. One, which Greg directed, that I just co-wrote, Greg directed the movie. And the first shot in the movie is a direct copy of the first shot of The Fog, John Carpenter's The Fog.
Yeah. Love The Fog.
We actually, Greg put the stopwatch at the same angle and the same shot.
We love
And the
fog.
Other thing was, we wanted that mischievousness of kind of classic Hitchcock, where murder is a funny thing. You know
that? Oh, you know what I? Yeah. Oh my God! Oh guys, you gotta see it. You're gonna totally see it now if you watch this.
There's a lot of that. I mean, there's Psycho in there. There's the birds in there. Uh-huh. There's Vertigo in there. There's literally Vertigo.
Yeah.
And the birds. And all of that. So that's what. But it's love a genre. We absolutely love it. We love American horror. Scottish horror, there's not a massive amount. I think The Descent I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is a great movie.
But we're kind of hoping in the next 5-10 years, they're talking about building a film studio in Scotland.
Yeah.
And I think that we're kind of hoping that horror could be at the forefront of that push for the industry, because it's a country that's dark for 9 months of the year. We have beautiful scenery and endless darkness, so make the most of it. That's right.
So we would hope to champion and spearhead that effort.
If you guys keep making movies like that, then I think you won't be a problem. So it'd be awesome.
Kind of you to say thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. And do you have any final plugs?
Well, watch out for the follow-up to We're Scared of Light next year.
Yes.
It's written, and it should be very interesting.
We're hoping to make it. It's called Long Night at Blackstone, so fingers crossed that we get green light.
Those poor bastards will be stuck
green light
in another house.
Sorry, Danny, what did you say there?
I said them poor bastards will be stuck in another haunted house.
You gave us something to look forward to. So, hey, thank you so much. Thank you
so much.
And
thanks for having us.
And thanks for coming to the States. On behalf of you, U.S., you guys are awesome.
Anytime.
Visit Scotland. We'll give you a warm welcome.
And that was Greg Hempel and Donald McLeary talking about West Scara Light. And now I want to do a quick review of the film. By far, it was my favorite one of the festival. It is a horror comedy in every sense of the word. It's one of those films, it actually puts comedy first. Like, they're in a somewhat horrific situation, but it's really genuinely funny. And you can tell that the writers, they have like, I mean, you can look at their history. They have a big comedic background, and it's very obvious because the characters are funny, they're very interesting, the dialogue is just great, and there's a couple of little winks at, you know, other horror films, but it's not overbearing and, you know, just obnoxious. It's done subtle enough, and it's, like I said, it's very entertaining, and if you ever can get to see it, I would highly recommend it. Yeah, West Scara Light. So, and with that, I would like to, let's say that concludes the horror hotel section of the film festival. So now we're going to move on to the indie gathering section. So we're going to take a quick break, and before then, so thank you for listening so far, and I hope you continue listening, because I still got a lot of awesome people to talk to. So thank you, and I'll see you in a bit. So, welcome back, and thank you for continuing to listen to this extremely long podcast. So now we are going to transition to the Indie Gathering Film Festival. And so we're going to go from gore and blood and guts and all that craziness to stuff, movies that make you think. And so my first interview is going to be with a man named Saba. Now, Saba originally came from France, and he's done a plethora of things, from dancing to singing to acting to directing and yada, yada, yada. He's a very, very, he's a well-informed man, and he knows a lot about filmmaking, so he's going to talk about that and talk about his career as well. So I hope you guys look forward to it. His interview is a little bit long, but it is completely worth it. So, but I now present Saba.
Hello, everyone. I'm Saba. I'm French. Originally, I moved to the States in 1996. Originally in New York, I did a lot of... I was a professional dancer, and I did theater. And then I retired from that and changed career and went back to acting. And I did acting for camera originally. And so I was doing a lot of movies from 2006 to, I want to say, 2010. And then I thought, you know, all these people around me that had so much talent and we weren't getting work. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to work with you. I'm going to write something for us. And I did. I wrote everybody in it. And one of the actors had a day job as a lawyer. And he said, well, you know, Saba, you wrote something for 28 people. We need to do some sort of legal thing. Let's create a company. So we created Cloudy Sky Films, which is my film production company in New York. I moved to Trenton, New Jersey, because it's bigger, cheaper, you know, get more room and all that. But I still use a lot of locations in New York and sound stages in New York City. And from becoming the actor, writer, producer, and all that, I also directed. And now, in addition to act in many movies, indie and Hollywood, I also co-produce, and and maybe direct or assistant direct, you know, other people's movies, you know, so that's cool.
Yeah. Awesome background. You all heard all that, and Cloudy Sky Films. But so you're here specifically to talk about three films. You said they were shorts. So you mind talking about them for a little bit?
Sure. So I have three projects at the Indie Gathering. The first is Sam the Vamp. Sam the Vamp is a feature film I wrote in 2009 that I couldn't shoot because it would have cost so much money. So I thought, well, let me adapt it into a short, and I condensed the main conflict, which is basically a comedy about vampires in recovery. And it's only 10 minutes. It's very quirky, and it's done so many film festivals around the world. I think we're at 35, maybe, festivals so far, and there's still more to come.
Wow.
We've won many awards. We shot that in New York for, I think, 60,000. Which is cheap and expensive at the same time, you know, but we did that on the soundstage. So that's Sam the Vamp. Then we did Being. Being, it's a movie I did with friends of mine in Los Angeles. I was there for a month, and I said, guys, you know, I brought equipment with me. Let's shoot something together. I wrote a script in 2 days, pre-production in 2 weeks. I found a team there in L.A., and then we shot that in 10 hours.
Oh, wow.
It was a crazy challenge because, you know, we couldn't do many angles. Basically, I just knew that, like, okay, that scene, there's an angle from there, 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 there. And then that's what we did. Doom, 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 doom. And then I was like, okay, I'm happy. Good. Let's move on. So 10 hours, it's insane. But so the movie actually doesn't look like it's been done in 10 hours. I mean, people had told me, wow, it's actually a cool movie. So I was very happy when you compare Sam the Vamp and Being, and you see one, you know, is 6 months productions, and, you know, a lot of people behind the scenes, and the other one is like, okay, 2 weeks, boom, 10 hours, nobody. Like, we had a DP, I was the director, the AD, and I'm in it as an actor.
Wow.
I found two volunteers that I had never met before that day. They came and said, hey, do you want to help? Yeah, we'll do anything. I said, great. So you're going to be the sound, the AC. I mean, they had like five different jobs, you know. And honestly,
Yeah, it is a great movie. I'm shocked. I was like, wow, we actually did something really cool. And people that I've met here at the festival the years before, one scored the movie. I had a lot of people helping after in post-production. And then the third movie is a dance movie. It's more experimental. I have a friend who's a foreigner who needed some credits for her visa. That's like a typical thing. And I said, okay, let's make a movie. I don't know what it is. But, you know, she's a dancer with my dance background. I said, find a partner. So she came with a friend of hers, and I shot them dancing on a table in my dining room, literally. And I put it together, and it's actually a really cool little movie. I mean, it's short, but it's nice. And again, I found composers from a film festival that did the score. So it's pretty cool. I'm very excited about it. All of this, of course, you can find information on our website, clouddyskyfilms.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, clouddyskyfilms. You can find my personal on French Saba. Mm-hmm. So I have FrenchSaba.com, Instagram, Twitter, all of them, French Saba. And, yeah.
All right.
Well, the cool thing about this festival is, I don't know if you've been here before. I've been here many times, but I haven't seen you before, so I don't remember. But what I love about the Indie Gathering, it's kind of mid-America. You know, it's easy for LA people to come, New York. It's not just like New York, you know, that it's far and all that. It's a great location. But they have a lot of lectures and panels, you know, for acting, screenwriting, editing, sound, directing. So I'll be doing some of those panels tomorrow. I'm also doing a lecture on crowdfunding.
Oh, okay.
Because you know that when we need money, the first thing you do is ask your friends. Mm-hmm. You know, that's like the easiest way to go, you know.
Okay, awesome. Well, you know, I think any budding filmmaker needs to, like, that's one of the main things is how do you finance it,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And, like, people think Hollywood's the only way, and, you know.
No, so I feel indie is great because we have a lot less rules, and we are allowed to do things that once you get to Hollywood, you no longer can. I mean, people think Hollywood have, you know, $200 million to make a movie. Yeah, but they also have so many rules, so many barriers, you know, people that tell them, don't do this, don't do that, you know. Like, you know, I just saw a movie where, like, ironically, they were saying, you know, they were looking for someone to fund their movie. Now, the guy is this black guy going to a white guy saying, so we need your money. And the guy said, yeah, okay. So, but can you recast it with all white? And he's like, dude, I'm black and I already shot half the movie. You know, and I thought, and so this is why I love the indie film, because this is the type of thing that you can say no to. In Hollywood, I mean, if Disney is your boss, if they say, we want this Star Wars to be like this, then it's going to be like this. Otherwise, they say, okay, you know what? Thank you so much. You know where the door is? Take it. You know, that's what, so.
Yeah, like Edgar Wright.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's why I kind of really enjoy doing indie movies, because yeah, it's tough. We have a hard time finding money and all that. We don't necessarily have access to, you know, huge names and all that. But when you make a good movie, you can be very proud of it, you know, because you know how much, like, sweat and blood you poured in, you know?
God, that was awesome. Okay, you basically answered every one of my questions, but I just, you seem like you have so many talents. You're a very creative person. What is your process like? Do you how do ideas come to you? Like, how do you see a movie? Like, how do you, like, where is it? Like, you know, you said you some friends were dancing on a table. Or?
You know, I feel like you. So I used to teach in New York. And a lot of students would come on first year, and they would write scripts that were amazing. Mm-hmm. But it was all about, you know, science fiction and fantasy and things that don't exist, that they don't know about. So there were a lot of mistakes and a lot of things to fix. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I used to say to them is, please, on your first few years, make mistakes by writing what you know. Mm-hmm. So if you know what it is to be rich and like, you know, run horses or, you know, go to India, write about that. Don't write Star Wars. Wait until you have experience to write your Star Wars. And so I feel this is what I do. I try to write as much as possible things that I know, that I have experience or that I know somebody has, and I can maybe interview people
and figure out, like, you know, what were their process and experience. If you write about someone who's got cancer, well, there are plenty of people who had cancer. Go talk to them. Mm-hmm. Figure out what it is. You know, I feel that it's strange that people always want to write things that they don't know. You know.
I'm so glad I asked that question. Okay. So,
I'm glad you did too.
Okay, I think that's a good way to end it. But okay, what are any plugs, like anything, any future products you want to talk about before I let you go and do your thing?
I mean, you know, so people ask me, well, what do you do, you know, to get inspirations and how did you learn things like that? Well, I'll tell you. In 2013, one of my friends turned 50. You know, he's the type of guy that has everything. I was like, what the heck am I going to give him for his birthday? I wanted something memorable. So I grabbed my camera and I filmed myself doing a parody of Journey, Don't Stop Believing. And I put it on YouTube. And, of course, he loved the whole thing because he loved that song. He loved that group. And people started sending me private messages on Facebook like, oh, my God, Saba, you should do, like, more. Can you do Bjork? Can you do this? Can you do Madonna? I was like, yeah, sure. So long story short, this is... 4 years later, I have 72 episodes.
Wow.
I take basically songs and I film myself. Sometimes I actually do crazy makeup. In many of them at the beginning, I was doing like impersonating Madonna and shit like that. It was kind of like hysterical. But then I realized I just wanted to sing and learn how to use Premiere as an editor.
Yeah.
So I started doing, you know, music videos that were more and more ambitious, trying to, like, play different characters, doing special effects. And that's such a great way to learn. I feel like if any of you watching, listening, want to become a filmmaker but you don't know how to start, grab whatever you have to film, whether it's a camera, a tiny little thing, or even your phone, and start to do a YouTube series about anything. You don't care whether you have subscribers, views or anything, likes. We don't care. That's not why you do it. You do it to see what comes out of you as an artist. As soon as you have to put something into a camera, you know, whatever you do, talking or singing or acting, you'll see what you like. You'll see whether you want to all of a sudden create a series about making scenes from famous movies. Each episode is one scene of a movie. Why not? That's a good exercise. You know, you figure out like how to film it, how to light it, how to edit it. And, you know, it can be a great lesson. I feel with the technology we have, we can record sound images very easily. Nothing is stopping you but yourself. So if you want to make movies, start small. Start a YouTube series. Call it, you know, something like My Experiment. Why not? And maybe you'll get views, maybe not, but at least you will learn something. And you will find yourself. And that's the most important part, I think.
I think that is an awesome way to end this. So, all right. Thank you so much, Saba. And that's Cloudy Sky Films. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Cloudy Sky Films. They gave out a bunch of pens here, so that's great. I got one. And so check it out. Okay, check it out. And check out this man's work. He just gave you a free lecture, so, you know, might as well pay him back that way. So
thank you.
Okay, thank you. And
all right. Take care.
Take care.
And that was Saba giving a mini lecture on filmmaking and talking about his career as a creative. So, some updates on Saba. His film, Sam the Vamp, is now available through Amazon Prime for free. This is pretty cool. And he's also now conducting acting classes at a studio. So if you're in West Hollywood and you want to really get into acting, then hey, you got a guy who, y'all heard him. He knows what he's talking about. You can check him out. You can take classes with him. So I think that's pretty cool. And you can check this all out on his website, cloudyskyfilms.com. So Alex, I'm putting a link to all this down there. So my next guest is someone who I thought was very strong. And her story, it touched me a little bit, and because she's a actor, stunt woman, and now she's a screenwriter. And she, a tragic event happened to her, but she kind of pushed through it to get to continue doing what she loves and to find another avenue for film and in filmmaking, which is her passion. So, lastly, I'll let the interview speak for itself. So, I now present actress, stuntwoman, screenwriter, Holly Barrett.
Hello, oneofus.net. I have finally found a writer here at the festival. So we're going to talk about some writing tips. But first of all, introduce yourself and why you're here and why I'm talking to you.
Okay. My name is Holly Barrett, and I wrote Sadistic Beginnings. It is actually up on IMDb. If you want to go IMDb, put in Sadistic Beginnings, and it'll pop up as Holly Barrett as being the writer. Pretty much basically, this is the first award for Sadistic Beginnings. I've rewritten it several times, and I've gotten to the point now where it actually is award capability for the indie films. Other than that, what else did you ask?
Let's talk a little bit about yourself. Talk about your background.
Okay. I joined the film industry in 2004. Mm-hmm. I'm a member of the Screen Actors Guild since 2008. Oh, okay. I did stunts on Public Enemies, so that's actually how I got my SAG card.
Public Enemies,
the film with Johnny Depp. Yep. Oh, okay. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the film with Johnny Depp. The first bank scene is one of the ones that they basically hired me in for. So you can see me on the far left-hand side of the screen.
Oh, okay. So you started in stunt work and then you went to screenwriting,
no,
or did you?
I started off as a background.
Oh, okay.
Background extra. Mm-hmm. So in 2004, I worked on several films, you know, like Santa Claus, I think there was also, I started on a film a friend of mine did called Blur Effect. That was my first acting job, which that's on YouTube, and then we did a part two. Then I started doing the extra work in Chicago because I'm from the Wisconsin area, and now Chicago actually has Chicago Fire, Chicago Med, Chicago PD, and Chicago Justice, I believe is what it's called. Mm-hmm. They also have Empire. Yeah, and I know they got several other ones coming in, so it's like it's a growing industry out there. So I've done on and off the film, commercials, and then stunt work, of course, too, as well. So I did stunt work on The Dark Knight, Wanted, Chicago Fire, and commercials, a U.S. Bank commercial where they chopped off my head on a piggy and they put an old lady's head on me. It was awesome. It was a 6-foot huge big pig that was like a bucking bull, so that was fun. But so that's a little bit about me.
Okay, well, you know, it's funny. Okay, so let's transition to the writing side. So what drew you towards, like, writing, screenwriting in the genre? I mean, in the craft.
In that craft. Well, that's actually kind of an interesting story because 2 years ago I got diagnosed with breast cancer. So I couldn't really do the acting and the stunts like I used to be able to do. So I was like, I love the film industry. I still want to be in the film industry. So I was like, I have so many stories to tell, and I want to get them out there, and I need to get them out there. I started writing.
Oh, that's okay. Now that's very. We've had a lot of interviews. A lot of them have been very passionate, motivational. I think that is too. Through that pain, you were able to kind of create this craft. So, it's. Okay, that kind of threw me off a little bit because I'm actually kind of I'm touched actually. It's all gonna get edited out. But so. Like I said, your background is in so much in, like, stunt work and whatnot. So when you transitioned to, like, screenwriting, did you feel like that previous stunt work, did that help you at all in writing? Or did you have to find other avenues or resources to develop your craft?
Well, I do believe that because of working on set and actually having sides from being on set, that helped me with my craft. So and helped me be able to know which way I needed to go with writing. So when I first started off, I made the big mistake by doing a shooting script.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No,
because those were the sides I got. So I was like, okay, that's how I write it.
I think every screenwriter has done it.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, I did the formatting wrong, so then I learned that you have to do the spec script. So that was my first biggest challenge, and the formatting, of course, was part of that challenge. And then I just started submitting it to contests. and I started getting feedback on improving your characters, you know, improving the dialogue, you know, try to put more description in the scenes. And from that, I've gotten it to the point that it's at now. Of course, it still needs to be improved even more so now than what it is. But you know what? Screenwriting is never done. You're always improving that craft.
I think that's a great lesson for everyone. But I think here's a question. This is a screenwriting question. It's honestly for me too. How many drafts, like on average, do you think you went through, or like with any like screenplay, or even with the most current ones?
Beginnings. Yep. Yeah. With that one, actually, I think I've only rewritten it 4 or 5 times, and not even like a whole rewrite. It's just sections of it. I've been like what I said about how to improve the dialogue. Don't have it so informative. Have it more natural. So then I would go back and be like, okay, which one's informative? And how do I change this to be a little bit more natural? And then I would kind of change that. And then after I was done doing those changes, I would submit it again to new contests and see what kind of feedback I would get.
Okay. Yep. So, you know, honestly, 4 or 5, I've heard that's like kind of the standard. I heard a lot of other screenwriters say that. Okay, I hate to do another question on top of that one, but deeper. How long do you take breaks from, like, between, like, when you write the first draft towards the second, third, or fourth?
I actually have a different kind of style of formatting and writing, for that matter. A lot of people like to write up the structure. Mm. I kind of write down the ideas, and then when I'm ready to process those ideas of how I want to tie them into the next scene, and all of a sudden I get that bug to write, I go to that computer and I write. So, and it could be for 2 hours, it could be for 4 hours, it could be for 6 hours, but as soon as I get that writing bug, that's when I go and write. So for me, it's not necessarily how a lot of them tell you, you have to write every single day and you have to practice your craft. Maybe for some people that works, but I believe for other people it doesn't. So I think whatever you find works for you to be able to get that story out in a way that it needs to be, then that's what you should pursue.
Okay, I think that's a great end to it all. But let's just do a brief overview of like what the Sadistic Beginnings and just a plug for yourself.
Okay, basically, Sadistic Beginnings is raising awareness for animal abuse and animal cruelty, and it starts off with a young boy who brutally tortures and kills animals and turns into a sadistic serial killer. There is an association that is basically the eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth type kind of association that will do the things that the government and the police officers won't do, because most of the time you just get a slap on the wrist. So, like, there's a scene where there's a jogger jogging in a park, and a goose comes up, and the jogger kicks the goose. So then all of a sudden the association pulls in with the van, they snag up this jogger, they put him in the van, they take him to a warehouse, and they start kicking him. So eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. Granted, yeah, maybe some people may think that's far-fetched, but believe it or not, it's not. Have you ever heard of the Sea Shepherd?
No, I have not.
Bob Barker funded a fleet of vehicles to go stop the whaling vessels in Japan, because Japan is saying that they're harpooning the whales for scientific reasons. But these vessels will actually ram the whaling vessels to stop them from harpooning the whales. So having an association in my screenplay really isn't that far-fetched.
Wow, that is fascinating. It's like the whole
a lot of info you don't know.
Yeah, an interesting history lesson. I didn't know about that, but Bob Barker is known as a Price is Right guy. So
yeah. A lot of people didn't know that.
Okay, so final plug for yourself, any future projects you want to work on.
Okay, my name is Holly Barrett, and I am an actress, stunt performer, and a writer. I am currently working on the new screenplay based upon what I went through. So it starts off with me being athletic, playing sports, me getting diagnosed with cancer, of course, the script character being diagnosed with cancer, then being able to overcome that and finding a new avenue in life and overcoming that. I actually do dragon boat races too, so that's my new kind of thing, the screenwriting, the acting, and the stunt still, but just not at the point that I was, because I know I have to have limitations. I am on IMDb, and it's HollyBarrett.
And that was Holly Barrett talking about her career as a stuntwoman and actress, and how tragedy led her to becoming a screenwriter, and it did not deter her from pursuing her dreams. I think Her story is very strong and inspirational, and I wish her the best in all her endeavors. That's Holly Barrett, and you can check her out on IMDb. And moving along, I interviewed my final interviewee, and that, and also quite inspirational. And they are two filmmakers, Sunita Krishnan and Rajesh Touchriver. Now, both of them have a lot of credits to their name. And Rajesh Touchriver, he has he's done many films, has won many awards. And Sunita Krishnan is just extremely powerful and inspirational in herself. She is actually, outside of filmmaking, she runs an organization called Pajwala, which rescues and rehabilitates victims of sex trafficking. And through her efforts, she has saved thousands of lives, especially women and children, and has gotten many awards for her efforts. She won the Civicus Nelson Mandela Innovation Award. She won the fourth highest civilian honor in India. She was named on one of 150 Fearless Women by Newsweek, and even won awards by the United States State Department and the United Nations. So she's done quite a bit, and so I was awestruck to interview her, and I think she deserves much respect, and she's done so much to help this world, and I give her all the praise. And so, but now I will now let that, I'll now present them both, Sunita Krishnan and Rajesh Touchriver, and they're going to be talking about their film, Rock Them, which translates to The Blood, and actually it won the Viewer's Choice. I'm sorry, it didn't. It was runner up for Viewer's Choice. Pardon me, it was the runner up for Viewer's Choice. So, now present them both.
My name is Sunita, and I've produced this film called as Raktam, which means blood. It's an Indian language Telugu. This film is in, and it's kind of a extraordinary. Very compelling movie on social revolutionaries. It's a story of five social revolutionaries and the conflict when they are entrusted with the task of assassinating somebody. You know, so they go through this inner turmoil on working out whether killing somebody is the right way to change the world. And I think this is a story of the world, because across the world we see people taking up to arms. For they believe they're going to bring social change and they're going to bring some big change in the world. But is that the right way to go about? So Raktam, The Blood, explores that conflict, whether violence and killing is the right way to bring social change. And Raj, my director.
Yeah. See, the film, Raktam, The Blood, inspired by the Nobel laureate Albert Camus' La Juste, a French play. And, you know, I read it long ago, studied the play long ago, and still happening in India. And a couple of months back, 24 Maoists, you know, that means revolutionary groups, was being assassinated by the police. And the conflict, you know, it's, you know, there I got inspiration that, you know, it's the play La Juste was written in 1949, but still the things... And the problems happening around the globe in all the countries. And then I thought that, you know...
Similar.
Yeah, it's very similar to that. And then inspired by that, you know, just, you know, which happened in India. And then an adaptation, you know, it's an inspiration from La Juste. And wrote the script, and then we worked on that. You know, it's an ideology crisis happening in the revolutionary group, whether to killing him, you know, for a reason. Killing some people is right or wrong. A conflict between the people, you know, between, you know, in the group. Okay.
People who are fighting a just war, you know, they think that they are on the right path. Sometimes you have to question that the means to an end, is that justified, you know? Is the end, you know, justified, justifying the means? Like you take the path of violence, you take the path of killing. But the end goal is a great social transformation. But does this journey justify the end? That's what Raktam is all about. It's not a story of India, as Raj has very, very clearly said. It's a story of the world. And what was a French play written by Nobel laureate Albert Camus in way back in 1949. Again, he was inspired by some incidents that happened in 1921. Is still relevant in 2017. Not just in India, but across the world. And that's what makes Raktam an international film, although in Indian language.
It's on the current issue, and which is happening in, you know, many countries around the globe. Yeah. It has got the relevance.
Yeah, it sounds like, from what I think that, like I said, I don't know too much about it, from only from what you've told me, but it seems like you delve into that moral ambiguity, because a lot of times it's like, there's a lot of different groups and faiths and whatnot that says they have this idea of absolute truth. You know, this is the absolute truth. Everyone else is absolutely wrong. So that, it seems like the, that kind of, like, people say that this goal or this idea, they're all reaching towards it, but in the process of doing so, there's so much horror and bloodshed and whatnot. So, one thing I think that these are big ideas, and so what I'm very interested in is, like, how do you get from the characters to the idea? Like, you know, you have these characters who are probably all dealing with these thoughts, these process ideas. How do you like create or how did you adapt that to make it fit to like their situation? Like, how did you personalize the people instead of just making it be about like I'm the evil guy or you know?
You know, one thing we were very clear, and especially Raj as the script writer and doing the screenplay was very clear. We're not here to preach anything. Mm-hmm. We're not here to tell people what to do, but we are going to expose some truth and facts for you. So it's for you to. It's your call to decide what is right and wrong. And so the story weaves around five people who have chosen to be social revolutionaries, you know, and they are mandated to assassinate somebody. Mm-hmm. And it's in the process of that this moral ambiguity and the moral conflict happens between them. Mm-hmm. Now, we as a film production company and as a producer and Raj as a director, we've been really working hard for the last many years to make human rights issues more watchable by the world. Mm-hmm. Most often, human rights issues are made in such a way that only the intellectual audience sees it. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's a small converted group of people who already know it, so they see it and they see it more. There's nothing, no change that is happening. We as a team believe in cinema as a visual tool that can be transformative. Mm-hmm. And for us, then this narrative, this storytelling had to be different. Mm-hmm. It had to be told to the world in such a way that the narrative itself is so compelling for anybody to watch. So you have a lot of poetry, you have a lot of music, you have amazing, amazing characterization. There is romance. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of emotional component. There are things that will make you uncomfortable, and there are things that will make you feel very sweet and nice. So it's a complete cinema, you know. Although it's a very, very heavy topic to deal with, but every stage of it is made in such a way, and I think Raj has to be given the complete credit for constructing the story in such a beautiful way that anybody can relate to it. And you will see yourself in the film in many places, you know. There is that deep, vulnerable person which will be seen somewhere that you can relate to. You know? And I think that's how the story has become so much easier to relate through the characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, connect. Everyone can connect to it and see, like, it's not just the pain of these people, it's the pain of everyone. So,
absolutely.
Okay, so now that we've, like, I think you've talked a lot about the film, but and I think you've done it very eloquently, but I want to hear you guys talk about the actual humanitarian work that you've done. Like, what have you, like, because I've been hearing a lot of it, and I think it's fascinating, but I want to hear it from you.
My main work is to fight human trafficking. For the last 25 years, I've been fighting sex slavery across the world. I run this organization called Esprajwala, which is one of the largest organizations in the world fighting sex trafficking. And we've rescued around 18,500 girls out of prostitution. And we run one of the biggest safe shelters in the world, which takes care of, at any given point of time, 600 to 800 victims of sex trafficking, provides them a safe space to rehabilitate and reintegrate back to society. Raj has been my partner in my humanitarian work too. Our last film was on sex trafficking. So again, we did the same approach that we did with Raktam there also. Na Bangaru Talli, which means my dearest daughter, is a story of a father and a daughter. Mm-hmm. A father who is a fantastic husband and a great father who takes care of his family and his daughter, but is actually a trafficker in another part of the city, mm-hmm. you know. And in the strangest circumstances, his own daughter gets trafficked. And that is a true story that that I had witnessed as a human trafficking, anti-human trafficking activist, which Raj picked up and made that this film. So we collaborate on taking real issues from my humanitarian work to this visual space so that the world at large, because I personally believe that we are small agents of change, but cinema can scale up the change to such a rippling effect that it can create a revolution in the world.
See, through the film, you know, this through Raktam, it's telling the revolution. It's not really through guns, can be made through the cinema too. You know, it's can be through the poetry, can be through painting. You know, from the World War II and all, you know, the Picasso and all the people, even Charlie Chaplin was doing through the cinema. And the revolution, you know, it's not, you know, it's not only through guns or blood. It can be through anything, and it can be through, you know, the media or anything. And so the making people think that, or in their own mind, you know, we are not, you know, as she said, you know, we are not preaching anything. Making people think that is the right way, which is the right way for revolution, for your rights. That's what we meant to say through the film.
So our humanitarian work and our innovations in cinema is both leading to the same destination, to make people believe in change. And change is possible when we bring the change within ourselves. So we are on the Facebook. We have raktamthefilm.com, our website. Please watch our website to see more updates on the film Raktam. Our film production company has a website. www.santachproductions.com. Please watch our website for more updates about more such very, very bold and innovative cinema. We bring in a fresh breath of air to independent cinema.
And that was Sunita Krishnan and Rajesh Touchriver talking about their film Raktam, which won runner-up for Viewer's Choice, and talking about Sunita's valiant and tremendous work in quelling the vile and horrendous crime of sex trafficking. And I forgot to mention this earlier, but this was actually my final interview. So, of the whole show, not just the Indie Gathering. So, I'd like to say thank you guys for bearing through it and listening to all these interviews. And I said, I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It probably won't be as much as I did, but I hope you guys still enjoy it. And you got something out of it. And like I said, all the links are in the description, so check out these great creators, because they, you know, they have, you know, keep up with their work, because I
from what I've seen, I saw some really great talent. I thought a lot of it was just so brilliant, and I had a fun time. You know, I can't say that enough. And but speaking of fun times, the next festival will be. The next two festivals, the Horror Hotel and the Indie Gathering, will be coming again this year in 2018, and it will be in Richfield, Ohio, at the Days Inn and Suites. And the Horror Hotel will be playing May 31st to through June 3rd on 2018. This year. And the Indie Gathering will be playing August 9th through the 12th in 2018. I believe it's going to be in the same venue. I'm not sure, but you can keep track of it. I'll present the links. You can, you know, stay updated through there. So like I said, you know, they're coming out this year. If you're in Ohio, if you want to, you know, go check out some great place where you can network or be creative people and have a lot of fun with either the gore, or if you want to do something a little bit more horror can be thought provoking too, but if you want to do something, you know, that's not so horror centric, you can go to Indie Gathering and you can check them both out. And like I said, it's a lot of fun, a lot of just great people. The hosts are awesome. You know, you heard Lamia in the beginning, so like I said, that you can have a lot of fun. You can have a lot of fun there. And there's a reason to go to Ohio. So, your host for the show, it has been London Viable. And as I said, I'm one of the staff writers for the site. You can check out my many articles here. And you can also check out some articles that I've written for another website called The Script Lab. They're a screenwriting analysis site. They also talk about screenwriting in general. This is thescriptlab.com. And you can also, if you want to just check me out what I'm doing, you can check out my Twitter at Narrative Exam. That's at NARRATIVEXAM. And like I said, I still want to give a quick shout out and thanks to John Billy Bolt and John Thomas for both helping me put all this together. So thank you guys again. And like I said, you can definitely check out their work. I'll put some links into them as well. So, like I said, thank you for listening to this very long podcast. I'll let you guys go. So, take care, have fun, and hey, check out some festivals and have fun. So, bye.